August 31st, 2019, in Dublin, Ireland. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, text 8 through 12. So if you can open your Gitas and we'll say the English of these together. Everybody ready? Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act giving up all the results of your work and try to be self-situated. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action, for by such renunciation one can attain peace of mind. So in these verses, Krishna is explaining how these two paths have a relationship with each other. So in the beginning of this chapter, we're looking at the two paths more or less separately. We looked at the path of bhakti, and we look at the path of first getting liberated. Without being that clearly defined exactly how, I mean, Krishna did go through the process. And now we're going to look at what is their relationship. So again, we're going back to the goal, that our goal is spiritual loving service for Shyamasundara. So we're assuming that this is the goal of either path, because certainly for Arjuna, who asked the question, it was the goal of either path. So our basic principle of this section of the Bhagavad Gita, 8 through 12, of chapter 12, is that there are acceptable processes, good processes, better processes, and best processes to achieve the goal. You know, so if I'm going to get from here to Paris, I could fly, I could take a car. I don't know, can I take a bicycle under the channel?
Yes.
I can, okay, I can take a bicycle, and I could also take a boat. Probably hard to take a boat. Could I take a boat all the way from Dublin to Paris?
Yes.
Could. Okay, all right, so I could take any of these. Now, if we're going to talk about speed, the plane would probably be the fastest. Of course, I don't know. By the time you have to go through security and wait at the airport and stuff like that, perhaps a car would be faster. But in other words, there's a best way to get someplace. There's an acceptable way. There's better processes and so forth. And part of this principle is that it's better to achieve success at a lower level than to fail at a higher level. Well, this is part of this principle, that there's acceptable, good, better, best paths. But it's best to be in the place where you're likely to be successful. And another part of this principle is that what's best for an individual is best at what that individual can succeed at right now. So there may be a difference between the best path and the best path for me now. Those two things may not be necessarily equivalent. Does this make sense for everybody? So suppose we say, well, the best way to go is by plane, but if I can't afford the ticket, or if I can't afford my own plane, if I don't know how to fly a plane, then I'm just going to crash. Yes, and I'll be in the hospital, whereas the people who went by bicycle have already achieved their destination. And we've seen that in the Hare Krishna movement. We've seen people who tried to jump to a best practice for which they weren't qualified, and they just crashed. And then they had to spend sometimes years recovering from their crash, whereas somebody who went in the way that was best suited for them ended up getting ahead in bhakti. So what is the best process? So this is given in text 8, where Krishna says, have a fixed mind and intelligence on Krishna.
Thank you.
Now, do keep in mind that this is, Krishna's talking here about a process. The goal is loving service to Krishna. This is a process. So we could say, well, this sounds like someone's already achieved it, but no, he's talking about a process. Amishnar Chakrabarti Thakur, commenting on the service, said, concentrate your mind on Krishna only, remember only Krishna, that form of Shyama Sundar with yellow cloth and forest garland, and not the impersonal Brahman. And also fix your intelligence, which has the power of discrimination, upon Krishna. This means to continually reflect on the statements of scripture using intelligence, which will result in meditation. Such contemplation is called manana. Thus you will achieve residence near Krishna. So it's very nice that we're talking about here. Sometimes the word mind is used as a catch-all phrase for the subtle body in general, which is made of what?
Mind, intelligence,
and ego. So sometimes when we say mind, we're talking about the whole lot of mind, intelligence, and ego. And sometimes when we say mind, we're just talking about the mind portion. Just like I was born and raised in New York City, which is part of New York State. So generally, if you say to someone New York, you usually mean New York City. But you could mean all of New York State. Or I spent some time on the island of Hawaii, which is in the state of Hawaii. So if you say, I'm going to Hawaii, most people think you're talking about the state. But if you'd say, I'm going to the island of Hawaii, it's one island within a series of islands within the state. So in the same way, the word mind or mana can refer to the whole subtle body, or it can refer just to the mind. So here, mind refers to just the mind, because Krishna is saying that we should absorb our mind and intelligence in him. And so Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is making this distinction that in our mind, we're meditating on this vision of the Lord's form. Now, which can also be, of course, his name, qualities, and pastimes. And then with our intelligence, we're absorbed in the philosophy. Isn't that nice? Yes? That's the statements of the scripture. We're absorbed in the scripture. And we certainly see devotees who do this. I mean, the devotee who comes to mind to me immediately is Dravida Prabhu. I don't know if any of you know him. Has he ever come to this part of the world? So he's an editor for the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, for the BBT. And so he's constantly absorbed in the philosophy and the statements of the scriptures. At the same time, he's constantly absorbed in Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. So what he likes to do is take Sanskrit verses and put them into English poetry and sing them. There's a video at the, I don't know if it was Panchatattva were installed in Mayapur or whether it was one of the later Abhishekas, but Dravida Prabhu is singing, I think it's the Shikshastika, and he's singing it in Sanskrit and in English. And when he sings it in English, he's singing it to a meter. And so he's regularly doing that kind of thing. So this is the best process, where one is absorbing one's mind in Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and one is absorbing one's intelligence in the statements of scripture. So who can follow this best process? Who's qualified for this? And the qualification is one has to already have attachment for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, in giving the symptoms in this connection, says that Krishna and his internal potency dance on one's tongue while chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna directly accepts the food that's offered, and the devotee does not live on the material plane. So these are the three qualifications that Prabhupada gives for taking up this best process, which would be constantly one's mind and intelligence are absorbed in Krishna. And do we have a name for this best process? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, commenting on text 8, said that this is called Raganuga Bhakti. Now, we should understand very, very clearly, I think this is widely misunderstood in ISKCON, that Raganuga Sadhana is a sadhana. It is a process. Perfection in spontaneous devotion is called ragatmika, but the practice of spontaneous devotion is called raganuga. And so even though one does have to have some high qualifications to take up raganuga sadhana, one doesn't have to be completely absolutely pure, because it is still in the sphere of sadhana. It's still in the sphere of a practice. We could... If we want to compare this to something material, like my daughter teaches Bharatanatyam dance. So when you're first teaching Bharatanatyam dance, people are focused entirely on the mechanics. You know, okay, I put my foot like this, and I put my foot like this, I put my hand like this, and how are my knees, and how are my elbows, you know, I've sat in on many of her classes, you know, and she'll say, you're not sitting enough, which means, you know, you have to have your knees bent, and you have to have your elbows like this, and so they're very focused on the practice, and you can see students at that level when they're dancing, even if we're in a performance, you can actually tell that they're very focused on getting the mechanics right. But at a certain point, they start to focus on the mood. So part of Bharatanatyam is also the mood. And it's done, you know, often with the eyes and the various expressions, because they're telling stories about Krishna and so forth. And so the dancers are supposed to be evoking a mood. But that also is about practice. You know, you practice not only the mechanics of the dance, but you also practice the mood of the dance. Is this clear to everybody? Yes? And at a certain point, you don't have to practice anymore. At a certain point, both the mechanics and the mood are just automatically part of who you are. So this process in text 8 is you're working on the mood. Your practice is this mood of absorption. So suppose we say, all right, I'm not qualified for this best process. I'm not at the point where Krishna and the internal energy are dancing on my tongue when I chant, and I don't perceive that Krishna is directly eating my offering. So what do I do? So what's the step to Raganuga Sadhana is what Krishna calls Abhyas Yoga in text 9. Practice to fix the mind in a trance of samadhi. And of course, this was referred to earlier in chapter 6, from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Because we were talking about the samadhi of bhakti in our last session, right? And do anybody remember what I compared that to? What kind of samadhi does the bhakti yogi have? What material experience do we have? Yes, if you're meditating on your child or some your romantic love or the new car you just bought, something that is that for which we have or for whom we have
love,
attachment. So text 8 is about people who already have some attachment for Krishna, and so in that attachment, they are practicing always absorbing their mind and intelligence in him. They're still practicing that, but that's flowing from an attachment to Krishna. So here we say, I don't already have that much attachment to Krishna, so therefore I'm practicing to fix the mind. And how do we do that? We're constantly pulling it back. If you love someone, if you're attached to someone, it's almost like you have to stop yourself from thinking of them. Yes? There's a nice statement in Vidugda Madhava where Radharani's complaining she doesn't want to think about Krishna anymore. And I think it's Purnamasi who says, you know, the yogis are trying to withdraw their mind from sense objects and fix it on Krishna, where Radharani wants to withdraw her mind from Krishna and fix it on sense objects. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in the Madhurya Kadambini that at the stage of a Shakti, which is still a stage of practice, your mind naturally goes to Krishna. But in Nista and Ruchi, you still have to make some effort. But in Nista and Ruchi, the effort, which is done in verse 8, is flowing from attachment. Whereas here in text 9, it's more flowing from a conviction. Do you follow the difference? Yes? If I love something, I love dance, or I love playing the guitar, and then I may practice out of that love. With the novel that I wrote, Essence Seekers. So after the third or fourth writing session, I loved it so much that I was naturally thinking about the book even when I wasn't writing it. And I was always looking forward to the times when I could sit down and work on it. Which is not true with everything I write. Yeah? Some of the things I have to write, it's like, oh my God, I got to answer that 3-page email that I just got today. It's a little different where I have to say, okay, let me just steady my focus. So text 8 is about, you know, you want to think of Krishna, you want to absorb your mind in intelligence Krishna, you love Krishna, and therefore the practice of thinking about him is flowing from that attachment. But in text 9, One is intellectually convinced. One has some taste and attraction for Krishna, obviously. But one is more intellectually convinced, and therefore one is doing more of a discipline of withdrawing the mind from other things and putting on Krishna. And this is, abhyas means repetition. Abhyas means repetition. It's very similar to the word sadhana, which means a kind of practice. Whenever we're talking about practice, we're thinking about something that we are repeating. Yes? So in this next verse, verse 9, it's, okay, if you can't practice flowing your mind and intelligence to Krishna out of attachment, then you make this deliberate, my mind's wandering, let me bring it back. Again, we all do this in our material life all the time. Yeah? You're driving and you get distracted and you bring your mind back to your driving. Yes?
Yes.
You're working on some project you have to finish and your mind wanders, you bring it back to your project. None of us finish school unless we learned how to do this. Right? We had a paper we had to write and bring it back. Of course, with our modern technology, it's a lot harder, isn't it? Yeah? The very devices we work on to write our papers for school also have inherent distractions built in them. You know, when I was going to school, my notebook and pen didn't connect me to people in, you know, China. So I didn't have that kind of distraction. My pen didn't all of a sudden pop up with an advertisement. So it was a little easier to withdraw my mind from other things and fix it on what I was doing. But this is the basic concept, except one is doing that for Krishna. Now, this Abhyas Yoga is on the transcendental platform, as Prabhupada writes in purport to Bhagavatam 1.7.10. Practice of devotional service in the material field is of 81 different qualities, and above such activities is a transcendental practice of devotional service, which is one and is called sadhana bhakti. So here Srila Prabhupada is talking about that sadhana bhakti is above the modes. 81 different qualities is 3 times 3 is 9, 9 times 9 is 81. That's what he's talking about there. So he's talking about we can do devotional service in the modes, or we can do devotional service that's transcendental, and practice bhakti is transcendental. When we're practicing thinking about Krishna, that's a transcendental process. Now, what is this Abhyas Yoga or Sadhana Bhakti? One of the most important quotes anywhere in Prabhupada's books, from Nectar Devotion, Chapter 2, it's the duty of the Acharya, the spiritual master, to find the ways and means for his disciple to fix his mind on Krishna. That is the beginning of sadhana bhakti. If this is all you get out of this whole presentation, this is the only thing you can remember, this is a life changer, that the beginning of practice bhakti is learning to fix your mind on Krishna. The beginning of practice bhakti is not running around doing things. The beginning of practice bhakti, the beginning of sadhana bhakti, is learning how to fix the mind on Krishna. That is where sadhana starts. If we're not doing that, we're not doing sadhana bhakti, we're doing the next verse, which we'll get to in a moment. So Abhyas Yoga, Prabhupada says, love of God is now in a dormant state in everyone's heart. The heart has to be purified of material association, and that dormant natural love for Krishna has to be revived. That is the whole process. So this is also a very important point, that our practice for attaining bhakti is not like a gymnast practicing. It's like a baby practicing how to walk. You know, we're not all natural gymnasts, but we are all natural walkers. So when the baby is practicing to walk, it's practicing something that's inherent in them. Whereas when a person is practicing doing, you know, backflips on the balance beam, that's not something that's inherent in us. Do you see the difference? Yes? And how does one do Abhyas Yoga? Under the guidance of an expert spiritual master, follow certain principles, rise early in the morning, take bath, enter the temple, offer prayers, chant Hare Krishna, collect flowers to offer to the deity, cook foodstuffs, take prasadam, various rules and regulations, hear Bhagavatam and Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees. So here Srila Prabhupada is talking about the external behaviors of sadhana. So we talked about that the beginning of sadhana bhakti is to what? What's the beginning?
Fix the mind.
To fix the mind. That's how we begin sadhana bhakti, but also we are doing things externally. So we're not just sitting in one place trying to fix our mind. We're serving the deity, we're chanting, we're reading the scriptures. And as Prabhupada says here in 1.5.36, while performing duties, one constantly remembers Krishna. So the idea is, if we look again at the definition of pure devotional service, anyabhilasitasunyam gyanakarma anavartam anukulena krishna anushilanam. Shilana means activities of the body and the mind. So in order to be in practice bhakti, we are engaging our body in activities of devotion, and at the same time, we are working at pulling our mind back again to Krishna over and over and over. And here in the purport to 1.5.27, Prabhupada saying the gross body should be engaged in acts of rendering service to the Lord, bringing water, cleaning the temple, making obeisances. The path of archana, or worshipping the Lord, involves engaging one's gross body in the service of the Lord. Similarly, the subtle mind should be engaged in hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, thinking about them, chanting his name, etc. So these are the two parts to this Abhyas Yoga. And then Prabhupada, in the purport in this chapter, to 1220, he says, one should not bother about materials to keep body and soul together, because by the grace of the Lord, everything is carried out automatically. Now, does that mean that a person in sadhana bhakti doesn't go to eat? Does it mean that they don't have a job if they're a grihastha?
They have to work.
They have to work. That's part of their service. So, but the mentality is different. For a materialist, they're thinking, I have to work because I'm the one maintaining myself. I have to maintain myself. Whereas a devotee is thinking, I'm working as a service to Krishna, and Krishna is maintaining me. And we'll get to that more in the third part. But this mentality that I'm working as a servant of Krishna, and Krishna is maintaining me. I had a really funny experience at my house in Govardhan. So there at Govardhan, the nearest temple is about a half an hour walk away. And so generally, if I want to eat, I need to cook. No, I'm generally not going to walk all the way up to the temple to get some khichdi. So, you know, cooking in the morning is easy because it's part of my worship of my deities. But then cooking another time of the day is not so easy. You know, I have to stop what I'm doing and get in the kitchen and cook something. So, you know, sometime at around 2:30, I'll start saying to myself, Urmila, if you don't cook, you don't eat. You know, and sometimes it gets to be 3:30. If you don't cook, you don't eat. You know, you got to get in the kitchen. So I was regularly motivating myself like that. If you don't cook, you don't eat. And then one day I thought, I wonder if that's true. I wonder if my eating is really dependent on my cooking. Huh? So a couple days later, I was invited to Bhakti Vikash Swami's Vyas Puja. I heard Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj give a class in English, which was very exciting. And afterwards, Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj arranged for some of his disciples to bring prasadam to my house. So they brought, like, I don't know, 20 preps. And it was like 10, 15 devotees came with their 20 preps. And then they fed me the next day, too. And I thought, oh, okay, I guess I can eat without cooking. Somebody can bring me prasadam. But the mentality here is I have my service. My service may involve running a business, just like Srila Prabhupada as a grihastha. What did he do?
He ran a business.
He ran a business. What kind of business?
A chemist,
right. It was a pharmaceutical business. And he created a lot of his own medicines. Yes? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what did he do?
He was a judge.
Yes, first he was a teacher. He was a teacher for a while, then he became a judge. So the devotees in the grihastha ashram, most people are in the grihastha ashram in the youthful portion of their life, part of their service is to generate wealth for the society. That's necessary. If the grihasthas don't generate wealth for the society, unless you're in satya-yuga and the trees are just giving you fruit without making any agriculture. That's still true in Hawaii. Prabhupada said Hawaii was left over from the previous yuga. So you walk in the forest in Hawaii, you know, winter there means it's like, gets down to maybe 16, 17 at night. That's winter, and, you know, in the daytime in the winter, it's probably like 22, 23. And in the summer, it's probably about 3 to 4 degrees higher at night during the day. So it's pleasant all the time. There's always breezes and plenty of rain and so forth, plenty of sunshine. So you walk through the forest, and literally, there are wild avocados growing. And at those measly little things you get in this country. Now, the avocado, we have like, I don't know, 20 different kinds of avocados. Some of them are this big. Bhakti Mark Swami came to visit us in Hawaii. We made guacamole, and he said, "What's your recipe?" I said, "Hawaiian avocados." Now they have an entirely different flavor. So you can, anyway, you can go through the forest, and you can pick avocados growing wild, bananas are growing wild, guavas and passion fruit and macadamia nuts. We have a macadamia nut tree in our backyard. And, you know, everywhere you go, there's just everything growing wild, and it never gets too cold, never gets too hot. So you can literally live in the forest. You know, you can quite literally live in the forest. You just bathe in the rivers. The rivers are all pure water. Like that. So unless we're living in an atmosphere like that, then generally you have to work. Yeah? When I was in, what's the capital city of Serbia?
Yeah,
Belgrade. Not sure. Anyway, it was one of those countries where they had fruit trees growing in the city. So you could walk down the city street and you could pick fruit, at least in season. Yeah? So society used to be like that. But generally, Krishna says no one can maintain their physical body without work. And so for most of the time on the Earth planet, most of us in the Grihastha Ashram have to earn a living as a service to the Lord. Not thinking, ahankaravi mudhat makarta hamiti manute, not thinking I'm the doer, I'm the one creating my own wealth, but thinking I'm doing this as Krishna's service, and thinking Krishna is actually maintaining me. It's not my job that's maintaining me, not my intelligence, not my hard work, but it's Krishna maintaining me. So in other words, one doesn't bother one's mind excessively with thinking about how am I going to be maintained, how am I going to be maintained, how am I going to be maintained. One bothers one's mind excessively with how can I please Krishna, how can I please Krishna, how can I please Krishna, which may look exactly the same externally. So it may look like, you know, you're working hard at your job, you're hard at your business, but the mentality is completely different. Okay, now what's the bridge between Abhyas Yoga of text 9 to Raganuga Bhakti? What is the bridge? And in text 9 itself, Krishna uses the word Icha. He says, by doing this Abhyas Yoga, one will develop a desire to attain Krishna. Because remember in text 8, where we're absorbing our mind and intelligence with Krishna, we're doing that because we have attachment. Just like we absorb our mind and intelligence in our car or our kids or our spouse or whatever, because we have attachment. So in text 8, one's absorbed due to attachment, and the whole purpose of text 9 of Abhyas Yoga is to develop this attachment. So if we're doing Vaihi Sadhana Bhakti, our purpose is to develop attachment, to develop a desire for Krishna. As Prabhupada writes in Bhagavatam 1.2.3, the materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation, yet the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. Now you might say, well, that's easy, I want to get out. By desire, we mean something that's quite intense. We don't mean something that's casual. You follow? I have many casual desires. Don't you have many casual desires? Oh yeah, I'd like that. I'd like that. Yeah, I'd like that. I'd like that. Just like this one devotee was visiting a temple where I was in, and he was giving lessons on how to play kartan. So I went to the lesson, I went to the two-hour lesson, and he was telling us, he was telling us a completely different way of holding kartals than I had ever held them. Yeah, Bhagavad Prana. I mean, it just, you know, I've been playing kartals since 1973, and he was showing us this different method of holding them and so forth. And I have in my house in Govardhan this really nice pair of kartals. They're bell metal, you know, and I really like them. And so I he said, I have a video. I downloaded his video. It's on my computer. Do you think I've even watched it? I haven't even watched it. It's on my mental list of, that's something I'd like to do. Something I'd like to do. I'd like to watch Bhagavad Purana's video. I mean, he was really thrilled that I downloaded his video. I said, download your video. Oh, great. But I didn't watch it. You know, so I'd have to watch the video, and then I'd have to practice, and I'd have to unlearn the way that I already do it and learn a different method. And I think, you know, next time I'm at Govardhan with my bell metal cartels, I'm going to sit down and watch the video. But there's a part of me that knows that I probably won't do that. You know, there is something in the back of my mind that goes, wait a minute, when you're Govardhan, you have to work on that interfaith paper for Anuttama that you're going to be presenting in Chennai, and then you have to work on the hermeneutics projects for the GBC, and you really think that you're going to sit down and learn how to play cartels. Huh?
His way.
His way. So, do we all have desires like that? You know, maybe some of you have a video on your computer or a book on your bookshelf. Yeah, I have some books on my bookshelf that are full of different exercises and processes for different things. And I think, I'm going to do that. I want to do that. So we're not talking about that kind of a desire. I'd like to get out of the material world. You know, it's like the guy at the hamburger joint. Yeah, I like to eat healthy. Right? We're not talking about that. We're talking about a desire that's very strong in one, and that's really manifested in one's life. Some really deep attachment. Some desire, Rupa Goswami said, it's like greed. You know, that I have to have it. I have to have it at whatever price. So that kind of a desire. So the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is meant to bring us to the point where that desire is strong enough that we can do Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. And that's the bridge. So you're going to see a lot of this in the rest of this section, these little charts. So from Abhyas Yoga, which we can also call Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, desire brings us to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. So the bridge between text 9 and text 8 is desire. All right? Well, suppose we can't even do Abhyas Yoga, because in Abhyas Yoga or Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we're engaging our body in devotion, and we're bringing our mind back over and over again to Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And Baladeva Jibhushan says, as the mind is fickle like the wind, I do not have the power to restrain it. So remember what Vishnuchakravarti Thakur had compared the mind to?
The water,
a river. And here Baladeva Jibhushan is comparing it to the wind. So, next verse. Verse 10. Where Krishna is saying, you can work for me, Krishna Karmani. All right. You don't feel you're able to do sadhana bhakti, you can work for me. And these three main rectangles represent, as my godbrother Ravindra Srupa would like to say, the three main categories of people who are in ISKCON. People who already have great desire and attachment for Krishna, and are absorbing their mind and intelligence in him as Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti Bhaktas, those who are engaging their body in devotional service, and they're working and engaging their mind in Krishna through repeated practice of Abhyas Yoga to develop desire, and then the people who struggle with even following the regulative principles of bhakti. And when I say that, I don't just mean the four regulative principles, meat, eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, giving those up. But I mean, you know, rising early, chanting 16 rounds, worshipping the deity, and so forth. The people who struggle with that, they can do work for Krishna. So Karmani Kurvan, Krishna Chagavati Thakur, in commenting on text 10, he says, doing services, Karmani Kurvan, such as hearing and singing about me, meaning Krishna, bowing to me, worshipping me, sweeping and washing my temple, picking flowers, even without remembrance of me as previously described, you will attain perfection, siddhi, and characterized by being one of my associates in prema. These are external activities of bhakti. So if people can do some of the external activities of bhakti even without thinking of Krishna, they will attain perfection. How will they attain perfection?
Desire.
Well, first of all, so by doing the external angas of bhakti, without thinking of Krishna, and without necessarily doing all of them in a regulated way, you'll start to think of Krishna. Once you start to think of Krishna, then you go up to Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Because once you start thinking of Krishna, you have the strength to start doing even the externals in a regulated way. Then by doing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, where you're doing the externals and thinking of Krishna, you develop the desire that takes you to Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, which will take one to the goal of associating with Krishna in one of the five relationships. Okay, so how does one do that beginning step properly? What's the mood? The mood is that I want to go and be with Krishna and his associates. You have that as a goal. You don't have the goal that I want to become rich and famous. You may want to become rich and famous, but that's not the goal of what you're doing. Everybody follow this? Okay? It's not that desires for being rich and famous or beautiful or whatever people's desires are. It's not that those are necessarily absent, but that's not what you're trying to achieve through bhakti. Yes? Not being interested in going to the higher planets or merging into the Brahman. So that one's not doing bhakti in order to get heavenly happiness or to merge in Brahman. One is doing some service for Krishna with the idea that I want to go to Krishna's planet. So we certainly have a lot of people in our ISKCON movement who are on this platform of verse 10. You know, some of these people, they're in our movement for 20, 30 years, they don't take initiation. Some people call them the eternal bhaktas. You know, so they're not chanting 16 rounds, maybe they chant a little bit here and there, and they're not following everything, but they're doing some service. They're doing some service, and they would like to think of Krishna, and perhaps sometimes they do think of Krishna. And this happens even sometimes to people who take initiation but find it hard to maintain all the practices of bhakti. So those two groups of people are in this category at one level or another. So what is the bridge between doing work for Krishna without thinking of him to abhyas yoga, where we're following the regulations of bhakti with our body and trying to think of Krishna? So Krishna explains this very nicely, that these qualities of peace allow us to start to fix our mind on Krishna. So what happens when we do the external activities of bhakti is our mind starts becoming more in sattva-gun. Our mind starts becoming more peaceful, and we're able to do those activities and think of Krishna. Yes, and of course we have 529, where Krishna says we attain peace by understanding that everything we're doing is to please Krishna, that he's in control of everything and he's our friend. So even if we're just working for Krishna, we're not doing all the regulations of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we're just working for Krishna, we attain peace because I'm working for Krishna. He's my boss. There's this deity in Hawaii. Prabhupada called him Kartamishayi, which means the boss. So understanding that Krishna is the boss. So that's going back to this concept of I'm working to please Krishna. Even if one may not be thinking of Krishna, I'm working to please Krishna. Bhagavatam 1.5.35, whatever is being done for the satisfaction of the Lord. If I'm cleaning the temple, I'm doing it so Krishna will smile. I'm working for my family, I'm doing it so Krishna will smile. I'm starting to move my identification away from I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a wife, I'm a banker, I'm a computer programmer. And I really like this letter to my god sister, who happens to be a good friend of mine. Prabhupada writes, you are a married wife, so in that position you should serve your husband nicely always, being attentive to his needs. The nature of woman is to be attached to her husband and family. So our system is to minimize this attachment. What? Wait a minute. So Prabhupada just says in the beginning of this letter, you're a married wife, so in that position you should serve your husband nicely, always being attentive to his needs. Doesn't that sound like you're supposed to be attached?
Yes.
Your husband? Sounds like that, right? And then Prabhupada says, the nature of woman is to be attached to her husband and family. So our system is to minimize this attachment. Well, how am I going to minimize this attachment if I'm always being attentive to his needs? Just, I'm serving him nicely always, being attentive to his needs. By making the ultimate goal of our activity the pleasure of Krishna. Just try to please Krishna always, and no material circumstances will be able to cause you any discomfort. So she's going to serve her husband nicely always and being very attentive to his needs to please her husband? No. To please who?
Please Krishna.
Krishna. What happens when you try to please a husband? Does it always work? Can you do it when you were married? Or all of you saw this with your own parents, I'm sure. Was your mother always able to please your father, like all the time? Or if you're married, you're always able to please your husband? Doesn't work, does it? Right? If your husband really likes lasagna, so you make lasagna on Monday, and he goes, wow, thank you, my favorite dish, and you make it on Tuesday, and he says 2 days in a row. You know, and this is, it's like that in general. It's like that in general, right? The man tries, he brings roses home for his wife, and she says, what about the door? You haven't fixed the door. It's just the way it is. And this brings us so much discomfort. As soon as I think, I am a husband, I am a wife, I am a son, I am a daughter, I am a mother, I am a father, I am a banker, I am a computer programmer, I am a this, I am a that, then as soon as we have those identities, then we have so many expectations of other people. You know, my husband has to appreciate my lasagna on Tuesday. If he doesn't appreciate my lasagna on Tuesday, then I pout and I have a fit. And you don't love me anymore? Make this lasagna for you. I don't care about me. You know, as soon as we have this identity, then other people have to, they have to build up that identity. My mother and father have to say, oh yes, you're a very good son. And sometimes they don't. I'm not going to do anything for my father anymore. He never appreciates me anyway. But if we're doing it for Krishna, then it doesn't matter if our father appreciates us, or our boss appreciates us, or our customers, or our wife, or our kid. Little kids are notorious at not being appreciative, right? It just doesn't matter, because the person that we're trying to get appreciation from is Krishna. And then our mood towards everyone is, I'm your servant. Now, of course, the service we do as a husband or a wife is different than the service you do as a son for a mother, or a brother for a sister, or an employer for an employee. There's going to be different aspects of that service. But we're doing it as a servant. Not as a husband, not as a son, not as a wife, not as a child. We're doing it as a servant, and servant not of that person exactly, but as a servant of Krishna. That, yes, and it's such a relief, as Prabhupada says. You will not feel any discomfort. So this can be practiced by a person on this level of Krishna Karmani. This is a beginning, imagine this. This is a beginning stage. This is a beginning stage. You're just doing some work for Krishna. You're not even following all the regulations of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. You're just doing some work for Krishna. But with this mood that Krishna, Bhakti Ramya Katapasam, Krishna is the enjoyer of my sacrifice. Not my family, not my friends, not my institution, Hare Krishna, not my government, not my boss, not my customers, Krishna. He's the one who's enjoying what I'm doing. He's the one who needs to be pleased with what I'm doing. And by practicing that, one will then segue into Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and be able to think of Krishna, because you've already been dedicating everything to Krishna. As Prabhupada writes in Purport 1536, in every sphere of life, the Lord should be situated as the proprietor. Everything. You're running a barbershop. The Lord is the proprietor of your barbershop. You want to cut people's hair in such a way that Krishna will smile. You want to deal with your customers in such a way that Krishna will smile. Everyone you deal with, everything you deal with, is Krishna smiling. And here, Srila Prabhupada referring to the purport, referred to in the purport of 1210, the purport of 1155, which Prabhupada refers to in the purport of 1210, which is the verse we're talking about, is one should not be attached to the result of his work, but the result should be offered to Krishna, and one should accept as prasadam the remnants of offering to Krishna. This is so deep. This is very deep. Results, by the way, doesn't just mean the money you get when you sell the painting. The results of one's work, the satisfaction that I have from being able to make a good sale, from dealing properly with the customers, from dealing with the vendors, the satisfaction I get maybe by using my creativity, right? All the satisfaction I get in the relationships, the satisfaction from my intelligence and creativity, the results I get in terms of my sense of mastery, any recognition that I get. It's not just the cash. Any results I get from my work, if I get knowledge, if I get strength, if I get respect, I offer all of those to Krishna. And I don't just offer them to Krishna at the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the whatever, when I get paid. I offer them to Krishna constantly because I'm getting results from my work constantly. I'm offering them to Krishna, and guess what? I get to eat the prasadam. That's very different than trying to enjoy the results directly, yeah? We do this with our cooking. We make a cheesecake, we give it to Krishna, we enjoy the prasadam. Same thing. I'm doing this work. Krishna is enjoying the work. If I'm just kind, we'll get to this in part three, if I'm just kind to the customer, I'm just kind to the vendor, Krishna's happy. He's this one who's a kind friend to all living entities, is very dear to me. Woo-hoo, all I have to do is be kind. And Krishna smiles. And do I feel good when I'm kind? Yes. But if I'm trying to please Krishna by my kindness, what I feel good about is the prasad. If I try to enjoy it directly, I'm like, I'm so kind. I really am. I'm just so kind. Does that work? Are we going to be kind all the time in that mood? No. Right? But like, Krishna, I hope you're smiling at how kindly I'm treating with this very irritable customer. May you be pleased with my kindness. And then we walk away, and what we have is the prasadam. And this can be practiced in every moment, all the time. This is Krishna Karmani. And this practice of Krishna Karmani, that Krishna is the boss, he is the one I'm trying to please, this brings me to the point that I can actually do sadhana bhakti, which means practicing to always think of Krishna. So this is the direct path. Engaging the senses, the external senses, and activities of bhakti. If I do that with the idea that Krishna is the boss, that brings me peace. It brings me peace. Why do we not have peace? Because I'm trying to enjoy the results of my actions. And many times my actions do not bring enjoyable results. Yes? Is this our experience? So if I'm trying to enjoy the results of my actions, I don't have peace. If Krishna is the enjoyer of my actions, then I have full peace. Because Krishna enjoys the intent. Krishna's not so interested in exactly what happens. Then the next step, practice of pulling the mind back repeatedly to Krishna while engaging the senses in bhakti, internal and external. That's Vaidhisadhana. Next, full absorption of mind and intellect in Krishna, leading to Smaranam Atmika, internal. So this first one here, right, for those of you following the Bhagavad Gita, this is text 10, text 9, text 8. Text 10, text 9, text 8. Do you see how they go together? Everybody sees that? All right. But there's another way you can get to Vaidhisadhana Bhakti. You don't have to get to Vaidhisadhana Bhakti through working for Krishna. Isn't this great? All these different ways that people can plug in different ways. If all of Ireland were Mahaprabhu's movement, there'd be people all over this, these charts. You follow? Okay? Everybody wouldn't be here, believe me. Everybody. If all of Ireland were swimming in Mahaprabhu's movement, it's not that everybody would be here. Some people would be here. Some people would be here. And guess what? Some people would be here. So, what is this part? What is this indirect way of coming to the Angas of Bhakti? And Krishna's talking about this because Arjuna asked, start out, what's better? And so Krishna talked about the two paths separately. Now he's talking about how they can fit together. So here's the indirect path. The indirect path is you start out with pious work. Remember how we talked about the indirect path had qualifications? Yeah? Bhakti doesn't have any prior qualification, but this path does. You've got to be a good person. You've got to be a pious person. You've got to do your occupation and your social activities according to scripture. Then you take that, and instead of working to enjoy, you work for purification. That's a little different than working to please Krishna. It's a little different than working to please Krishna. It's more working for liberation. So instead of taking care of my family and doing an honest work so I can enjoy in this world and enjoy heaven, I'm taking care of my family and doing honest work so I can get purified of my material attachments and attain to liberation. So this is karma. This is karma yoga. Then from karma yoga, one can go to gyan yoga. In gyan yoga, one is studying philosophy, realizes self. From there to dhyan yoga, where one can engage in deep meditation on Krishna, and then I realize the self, Brahman and Paramatma, which was exactly what Arjuna was talking about in the very beginning of this chapter. How else could we understand the indirect path? Live according to the dictates of one's social and spiritual order, then go to karma yoga, then jnana yoga, then finally in meditation, realize the transcendental position of the Lord, then see in the heart the form of Shyamasundara. This is the yoga ladder. So this is how Srila Prabhupada describes what is the indirect path. So again, preliminary qualification. You have to, we've quoted this before, live according to the dictates of one's social and spiritual order to acquire sufficient piety. Then, do work detached from the fruit of work. Detach from ashram duties. In verse 11, Krishna says, Sarva karma pala tyaga. All of your work, the fruit you give up, is what this literally means. Pala is the fruit, tyaga, give up. And in text 12, he says it again, karma pala tyaga. Give up the fruit of your work. This doesn't mean you work and take all of your money and go on your balcony and throw it off the balcony. That's not what it means. It means you stop trying to enjoy the fruit of your work. You're not doing your work to enjoy your work. You're doing your work to get purified. You understand, I've been given a certain kind of work according to my nature. If I do that work, I'll get purified. And Krishna says, Mad yogam ashrita, take shelter in my method which gives protection. Take shelter of the process of offering all your actions to me. And he says, with a controlled mind. All right, next step. Study the Upanishads and gain jnana. This can go to Sankhya Yoga to understand the Supreme Controller. So after one's become purified by detached work, then one gains knowledge of Brahman. Now just a little note here, according to Bhagavad Gita 5.4, Karma Yoga and jnana Yoga lead to the same result. So you could go directly from being a good person to Karma Yoga, or directly from being a good person to jnana yoga. You don't have to go through karma yoga. The karma yoga step can be skipped. Now what you really want to come to is jnana yoga, because only in jnana yoga you can be meditating on the Lord. So how do they prepare you for this? So in Bhagavatam 11.23.45, which Prabhupada quotes in the purport to 2.3.147, he says, charity, prescribed duties, observing major and minor regulative principles, hearing from scripture, performing pious works, observing purifying vows, aim at subduing the mind. So you remember how working for Krishna ended up in giving the mind peace? Y'all remember that? Gives you the mind peace because Krishna's the enjoyer? Well, this is another way of finding peace. Give up the results of your actions, not exactly to Krishna, but for purification. So the karma, the bridge here from karma yoga to jnana yoga or jnana yoga is trajak chantir alevaram. Trajak chantir anantaram. As we give up the results of our activities, we become peaceful. Because what causes me a lack of peace is always attached to the result. Will I enjoy this result? 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 Oh my goodness, I didn't enjoy that result. Oh, it's this person's fault. It's that person's fault. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe I have to do this another way. Maybe I have to do that way. I'm going to try again to enjoy the result. That's why we're not peaceful. And by result, I don't just mean cash. Again, I mean, you know, do people respect me? Did I get healthier? Did I lose the weight? You know, does this person love me? Is my house beautiful? Did I learn this thing? Whatever. We're attached to a particular result. We want to enjoy the result. It doesn't always work. And we know it doesn't always work. And so we're always in a state of anxiety. But if I give up trying to enjoy the result, I just do it for purification. That's hard. It's easier to do it to please Krishna and become peaceful that way. But if I do it for purification also, I will become peaceful. And this peace, it is again the foundation for Abhyas Yoga, because in Abhyas Yoga we're bringing the mind back all the time to thinking of Krishna. I can't do that if I'm full of anxieties. I just can't do it. Do you experience that? If I'm full of anxieties, I just can't keep bringing my mind back to Krishna. It just doesn't work. I try to grab onto Krishna and it just floats away in the sea of my anxieties. So now we're at Gita 12:12. Trajak Chantir Anantaram. Chantir is shanti or peace, Anantaram at the end. Trajak, it means renunciation. At the end of renunciation, one will find peace. One will find peace. So, therefore Krishna is saying, you know, you can cultivate knowledge. Better than knowledge is meditation. Better than meditation is give up the results of your actions. If you're just meditating, but you're still trying to enjoy the world, you're studying philosophy, you're still trying to enjoy the world, you're not going to become as peaceful as if you give up trying to enjoy the world. And how do one attain peace? As Krishna said in the second chapter, not that there's going to be all these desires and thoughts flowing through the body and mind, but we don't grab them. We let them go. We don't strive to satisfy them. Please don't think peace is going to be attained by all the material thoughts, emotions, and desires are all going to go away. Peace will be attained by not trying to grab them, not paying any attention to them, just the way we feel when we pass so many people on the street. We don't stop and talk to all of them, yes? We just let them walk past. Imagine how disturbed it would be if we tried to stop and talk to all these people. Hi, how are you doing today? And then, excuse me. I mean, some people might be happy, but most people probably wouldn't be. So that's what's happening. All of our thoughts, desires, emotions are going past, and we're trying to grab them. Oh, I'm going to enjoy this. Most of the time it doesn't work, right? So just let them go past. And of course, Krishna says, how can there be any happiness without peace? From Bhagavad Gita 2:66. So the last step on the yoga ladder is Jnana Yoga. So the peace that comes from either karma yoga or jnana yoga, that peace is used to meditate. Just like that peace could be used in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that sense of inner peace can be used to meditate on the Paramatma. So the bridge from karma yoga, jnana yoga, or jnana yoga, how do we get from there to bhakti? Because remember, this was the indirect path. And remember what Prabhupada said, by the grace of some devotee? That's how we get there. So we have faith arising from grace. So let's put it all together. I told you I have a bunch of these. I had a lot of fun doing these. This is my sense gratification, just doing things like this. So here we have ugra karma, which means nasty things. Ugra karma is, you know, lying, cheating, stealing, meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, you know, running a liquor shop, running a burger place. It's ugra karma. It's called Vikarma. Now it's interesting, in Bhagavad Gita 4:36, Krishna says, even if you're the most sinful of all sinners, you can cross over the ocean of material miseries by my grace. Therefore, one can go directly from ugra karma to the angas of bhakti. We gave examples, right? Remember the examples? Examples. Way back in the first session. Yes, okay. You can go right to the angas of bhakti. By doing the angas of bhakti externally, you get peace. with that peace, you can practice vaidhisadana. From vaidhisadana, one gets desire. From desire, one can practice bhaganugasadana. Everybody got that? All right. But if you just do ugra karma, you're going to go to the lower planets or the lower species on this planet. Then there's karma. Karma means you're a good, pious person. So if you're a good, pious person, don't take up bhakti, take birth on earth or on heaven. And then in 7:28, Krishna says, those who are free from sinful activities in past lives and in this life, take up devotional service. So from karma kanda, those people also, if they get faith, we need some faith here to go from vikarma or karma. They have faith, they can also take up the angas of bhakti. So impious people, pious people, if they have faith, can take up the angas of bhakti. By doing karma kanda, one gets piety. By that piety qualifies one for karma yoga. So we've gone vikarma, karma, akarma. In karma yoga, you're doing akarma. Your activities are not producing further karma. If you have faith, you can go directly now to abhyas yoga instead of the angas of bhakti. So you see there's a little difference here? You see there's a little difference? So if I'm already doing karma yoga, I can go right to abhyas yoga. I don't have to go down here. If I don't take up bhakti, then I'm meditating on the universal form, so I can join Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who's the soul of the universe. Or if I'm not quite that advanced, I'll go to the planets of the Prajapatis or the Rishis. By doing karma yoga, I get peace. With that peace, I can do gyan yoga. From gyan yoga, I can go directly to abhyas yoga with faith. This faith is coming by the association of a devotee. If I just go in karma yoga and I don't develop bhakti, I'm going to merge into the Brahman. Okay, then with the peace attained through karma yoga or gyan yoga, remember you can skip the karma yoga stage, we go to jnana yoga, where one is meditating on Brahman or the super soul. Again, with the development of faith by the association of devotee, I can go to abhyas yoga, or I can go to Brahman or Paramatma. Notice that it's very rare that any of these people go right to Raghunuga. Notice that generally they're going to go to Vaidhi. Okay, this same chart here, but looking at Varnashram. So here, you know, our arrows were going this way. Where do they go? And this one, who's going to take these up? So people who take up Vikarma is either below Varnashram, they're not even doing Varnashram at all, they're just criminals, or some perverted Varnashram. You know, some scientist who's working on drug studies being funded by the drug companies. That's a perversion of the Brahmana Varna. Right? Or some Vaishya who's just fattening up chickens for slaughter. That's a perversion of the Vaishya Dharma. So some perversion of Varnashram or below Varnashram. Karmakanda, any kind of grahastas in all of the Varnas who are trying to enjoy. Karma Yoga, any grahastas from all the Varnas for purification. Jnana Yoga is generally just the Brahmanas and often renunciates who are just sitting around studying, they're not going out and working. And Jnana Yoga, again, usually done by Brahmanas, mostly renunciates. And again, we have the same thing of peace and desire and faith. So, we've looked at two paths to Abhyas Yoga. The only path to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti is through Abhyas Yoga, generally, unless you get some mercy of a devotee and go right to Raghunuga Sadhana. But most of the time, the path to Raghunuga Bhakti is going to be through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which gives us desire. But to start up Sadhana Bhakti, you can either take up the Angas of Bhakti, which is the direct path, which gives you peace, or you can do the yoga ladder, which gives you both peace and then the faith you get from a devotee. Is this clear to everybody? This is a summary of this whole section. And just a little side note that there can also be mixtures. So you can have karma mishra bhakti, gyan mishra bhakti, dhyan mishra bhakti. And in Prabhupada's purport to 10.10.20 to 22, he says, by karma mishra bhakti, you go to heaven. Gyan mishra bhakti, you go to Brahman. Yoga mishra bhakti, you realize the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord. But bhakti doesn't depend on any of this. That's just a little side note. We're going to summarize these paths again, these two paths. So this is summarizing this chapter, text 1 through 12. So we have the long road from karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga. And Prabhupada's, this is from Prabhupada's purport, 647. So karma yoga without fruit of results is the beginning. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, it's jnana yoga. When it increases its meditation on the super soul, it is called astanga yoga. When one surpasses astanga yoga to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's called bhakti yoga. So this is the long path. Some people like taking the long path. These paths are available because that's where some people want to be. There's some people who really want to be karma yogis or jnana yogis or jnana yogis. They don't want to be immediately bhakti yogis. And again, if we had Mahaprabhu's movement flooding all of Ireland, believe me, we would have people taking up some of the indirect path. And is that okay?
Yeah.
It's totally okay. Then Prabhupada says, why walk up all the steps if you have a chance to take an elevator? We can go step by step or we can go directly. So we can go directly into bhakti from either pious or impious life. We don't need to take this long indirect path. Okay. Take just a few minutes for questions and we'll take another break. Any questions? Yes.
Have you had success in presenting this in your work with other interfaith people and explaining it?
You know, I haven't tried to, and I think if I did, I'd probably rework the presentation a bit. This particular presentation is very quote heavy, and it's very quote heavy on from Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, which I don't think I would really present that so much to people who weren't in our tradition, because it wouldn't be that. I mean, unless it was scholars.
With the principles of it, how have you?
Yeah, I mean, if I was presenting this interfaith to scholars, then yes, I would do that. But if I was presenting it interfaith in a more casual, less scholarly environment, then I would greatly simplify the presentation. And what I would also do is I would change the language. So if you, the way that I've done this is in the novel Essence Seekers, which unfortunately I've sold out of, but there it is on Amazon, both in, it's in print, Kindle, and audio. So in the Essence Seekers book, I do describe all of this, but I describe all of this in simpler language that's geared to the general public. So, for example, I call this the action connection, the knowing connection, the mastery connection, and the devotion connection for bhakti. So I call it action connection, knowing connection, mastery connection, and devotion connection. And I explain all these in terms of four schools that are in the city of Acumen. And the schools are situated in the different directions of the city according to Mahaprabhu's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. So the mastery connection is in the north, and the knowing connection is in the west, action connections in the south, and devotion connections in the east. And then I describe the obstacles on each path, which was given by Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami, that the obstacles in the mastery connection, the obstacle is the snake, the obstacle in the knowing connection are the yakshas, the obstacle in the action connection are giant hornets, and the obstacle on the devotion connection, what's the obstacle in the devotion connection? What destroys the devotion connection? What creature? What animal?
Yes.
Good guess. What animal destroys the devotion connection?
Elephant.
The elephant. Crazy elephant. So I have these symbolic obstacles in each of the four points. So I describe them in that way for the general public. But I definitely would change this somewhat.
We don't mind how anybody gets to Krishna or God or whatever it
is. No, we don't. We advise them to take the lift. We say our advice is take the lift.
Yeah.
don't take the long road through the mountains. But you know, some people want to take the long road through the mountains. Different people are attracted differently. Just who we are. I mean, even within bhakti, we're attracted to different aspects of bhakti. Which is totally okay. Krishna's all right with it. I mean, he's saying, look, there's going to be more trouble, but you will at last attain me in that way. Any other question? Yes. Well, you don't have to, but yeah. You'll be happy.
With experience, when we start giving some Krishna's pleasure, they sometimes, because of your conditioning, there is mixed emotions or intention. When you're doing it for Krishna, but at the end, you are still expecting some result of...
Well, then obviously you're not doing it entirely for Krishna.
Yeah.
You're substituting something else and saying it's Krishna.
So what do we do to kind of fix our attention to remind us that we're doing it for Krishna?
Well, like an ordinary person at their desk, they have a picture of their family. You could have a picture of Krishna and remember he's the boss. I'm doing it for you. There's a school in London, you may be familiar, the St. James School, where they teach kind of a mixture of Christianity and Sankaracharya. Interesting school. But anyway, everybody there learns Sanskrit. And at the beginning of every class, they say a Vedic mantra that they offer that class to the Paramatma. At the end of every class, they again offer that class to the Paramatma. So one can have this mood. At the beginning of everything, I'm offering this to you, Krishna, for your pleasure. And at the end of everything, Krishna, I've offered this to you for your pleasure. One thing I found very helpful was when I was working on the Learn to Read, the children's literacy program. So when I started working on it, I was alone, and I didn't have a team. I mean, I had some people who were helpful, but I didn't have a team of people working. And I had no money, like literally, I had really no money. I had no experience putting together a literacy program. I had decades of experience teaching literacy, and I had put together curriculum, but I didn't have experience creating a literacy program per se. I had some training from the Institute of Education of the government in London, but I didn't feel that it was sufficient training. I mean, I already had my PhD in education at the time, but I still didn't have that much training in that specific area. And I was trying to do something very revolutionary. I was trying to combine both phonics and whole language, which not only had never been done, but I was told by experts in the field was impossible to do, which is the kind of thing that makes me excited. I'm kind of a strange person like that. So that one time got me into trouble when I told somebody, you know, if you really want to get me to do something, tell me I can't do it. And what they understood that was that I would be incorrigible. That's how they understood it. They understood that I would do the opposite of whatever anybody told me to do, and that wasn't what I meant at all. But anyway, so that was the situation that I was in. And I had basically no hope of ever getting anything done at all. I mean, absolutely no hope whatsoever. It was just me and my computer, and I'm just writing books on my computer, and the chances were that they were just going to stay on my computer. But what I did, I wouldn't say constantly, but I did it many times during the day, is I made a mental picture of them being finished. So I made a mental picture of the books being finished, and you know, beautifully illustrated and so forth. And in my mental picture, they were being read by Radhakrishna and the gopis, like Radhakrishna and the Astasakis. And they were reading the books, and they were laughing, and they were enjoying them. So I made this mental picture, and many times during the day, I would revisit this mental picture. And as I was working on the things, I had this mental picture in mind. So after some time, I ended up getting a breakthrough. There was a devotee in Australia who connected me with some... a professional artist in China, made the connection, somebody paid my ticket to China, I had a devotee in Australia give me a $10,000 donation, I was connected with another artist in New Zealand, and some devotees there donated for that artist. So pretty soon people started giving donations, and they started giving me connections, and things started moving ahead, you know, very gradually. Altogether, it took 3 years, and it went from me working on my computer in New Zealand, looking at the tidal estuary and the cows and the pukiko birds. You can look that up. They're really nasty birds. So looking at that and being alone and just meditating on this vision, to eventually we had 200 people all over the world working on it. The books got translated into 24 different languages and so forth and so on. But even up until 2 months before they were printed, we had no hope of printing them. I didn't have the money to print. And, you know, we really just had no hope at all. And then this publisher said, we'll pay to print them. You know, and it was kind of funny because the name of our nonprofit is Padma Inc. And one of the publishers said, oh, I've heard of Padma Inc. That's a really big organization in America, isn't it? And I didn't say a word. I just didn't say anything. I just kind of sat there. I thought, I ain't going to say anything. Anyway, so they put up the money to print it. And what was really interesting is that the publishing company, they did employ one or two Hare Krishna devotees, and the head of the company is a Bengali who's favorable to Krishna consciousness, but he's not a full-on Hare Krishna devotee. And most of their employees were not devotees at all, just regular Brits. And the head of the company had asked one of their design people, please design covers. The books were going to be put in boxes. There were 83 books, and we were going to have 3 boxes, beginning, intermediate, and advanced. He said, design covers. So this design person had the idea that she was going to take illustrations from the books and combine it with photographs of children reading the books. This was her idea. I didn't know what they were doing. You know, he just said, do some covers. So we came in there one day, and they showed us one of the covers. And in one of our books was about Radharani and Chitra trying to find Krishna by following his footprints. And there's one picture where they're like this, looking at the footprints. So this design artist, who was not a devotee at all and hadn't talked to me whatsoever, even for half a second, about what design she wanted to do, had Radharani and Chitra doing like this, looking at children reading the books. It was my picture. There it was. On the cover of the box. So that's how you do it. Whatever the result is, meditate on that being offered to Krishna. And I tell you, when I started that, I didn't have a hope. None. By logic, I had a 1 in 10 billion chance of ever doing anything. Alone, you know, in New Zealand, with no money, no connections, no experience with doing this, nothing. And what was really, really interesting is that when everything was printed and they were in the boxes and there were piles of these boxes there, I didn't feel any more or less happy than I did at each moment during the process itself. So the result that I was enjoying was something that I was enjoying moment by moment. As I was offering moment by moment this picture to Krishna, I was enjoying the prasadam moment by moment as if it was already done. And when it was actually already done, it was just a continuation of the same thing that I was feeling. And the fact that thousands of children have now learned to read English happily in connection with Krishna, to me, is actually not as important as what I learned about how to offer everything to Krishna. That's kind of a side thing. Oh, that's nice. So that's how I know. You know, was I living in that space 24/7? No. You know, there were certainly moments that I was like, oh my God, this is never going to work. How am I going to get it? You know. And there's certainly times like that. Is that all right? Okay, let's take a break until 1:30, and then we have the last part, which very much concentrates on how to please Krishna.